Welcome to Commas.
Commas is all things tech.
The culture and technology coming together.
Life hacks.
The practicality right now in the inefficiency of the internet of buying and selling stuff is extraordinary.
Entrepreneurship advice.
I think the first thing is you got to understand your business inside out.
Love and tech.
We've almost reduced dating to kind of this very momentary snap of a person.
It's gonna be a fire show.
I have yet to see something these days that's truly differentiated.
New advice and new inspiration every show.
This really is about the next generation of creators going faster, further than we did.
And now, Sequoia Blodgett.
Now let's start stacking them commas.
On this episode, we catch up with Stanford and Kellogg grad Rasheen Taha, founder of 7X Collective, and we talk about why community is extremely vital to the growth of your business.
Entrepreneurship advice. Learn from the hottest and most successful investors, founders, and innovators in the game.
Determine your greatness.
It's time to get your knowledge up.
Okay, for sure.
Hey, yo, what's poppin'? We got Rasheen Taha in the studio. What's good?
How are you?
I am amazing. I'm so happy to have you. And I'm sure that our guests are happy to listen to you because you got some gems going on. Yeah. Stanford grad, Kellogg grad, MBA, all kinds of companies in the digital space a lot. But I want to get into your background so we know exactly what you do.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Where are we starting? Are we starting from the beginning? Or
Yeah, like, let's the come up. We want to know the come up.
Come up. All right. May 24th, 1982. It was a glorious day.
Was it?
Came out and, you know, from the sky and woke up in Harlem.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm from New York.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know I lived out here. I've been like a trader for years, but I'm from New York.
Everybody that's been rolling through the studio lately has been from New York.
I mean, you know.
Okay. All right, I see you.
Listen, there's a New York migration taking place. It is Cali sunshine. Once people realize, like, you wasn't going to die in the East Coast, West Coast beef, and then you realize that this sun game is year-round. New York is in the building right now. So from New York, grew up there, moved around a little bit as a kid. So K through 8, went to 8 schools in 8 years. So
wow, why was that?
You know, family stuff.
Okay.
Family stuff, but was good. I mean, it ended up all working out.
As everything does.
For sure, family stuff. Went to Fordham Prep, so I went to high school in the Bronx, lived in the Bronx in high school, and then went to Stanford. Went out before that, I was playing basketball. That was my whole.
You just slid that in there.
What?
Went to high school in the Bronx, and then went to Stanford, then I was playing basketball. So what was that transition? Because you don't just go to Stanford.
Yeah, nah. I mean, so my whole identity up to that point was actually like being a basketball player and being good at school. I was going to probably go play at Brown. And I went from my Brown visit and went out to Stanford to go visit. Didn't get recruited there, but met these amazing people and saw palm trees. And the combination of it was like, what is this place? Plus, they were paying for it.
Oh, wait. So you went on a basketball scholarship?
No. I didn't get recruited by Stanford.
Okay.
Was going to play at Brown. Did not get recruited by Stanford.
Okay.
Went out there. Got an academic scholarship, actually.
Oh, nice.
Got an academic scholarship.
You're like, because I'm smart. Okay. Everybody don't play basketball. Sequoia.
I didn't say that. But went out there and met some amazing people. It felt right. And it was one of those big decisions where you kind of go with your gut. And that was like the first big gut decision that I made. And I think it was one of the best decisions that I've ever made in my life. Right before I came here, I was just on the phone with one of my best friends, IB, literally before I came up here. Like, we met AdMit weekend, April 2000, around this time. Still rolling today. So from that perspective, the friendships that got developed and the learning and the environment that it cultivates, and it really pushes people to kind of choose their own path and let people feel like they can do anything and anything is possible. And I kind of ran with that and embraced it at Stanford, and it kind of like led me to the next steps in the journey.
Super dope. What did you go to Stanford for?
I majored in sociology.
Okay.
Thought I was going to major in econ.
Okay. So what was that switch up like?
I got beat up.
Explain.
In class. I mean, it was real. It was real. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm not going to do this. And then I was like, all right, I'm majoring in poli sci. And then I got even more beat up in that. And then I was like, all right, maybe not going to do this. And I was like, well, kind of like group, kind of like, you know, like kind of like the psych. Somebody's like, why don't you take a sociology or a psychology class? So I took both and really kind of liked the whole idea of groups and kind of studying that and the dynamics of that and people. And I don't know, it's just kind of, I think it's played into like what I've done in my life with groups and kind of studying them and getting the right insights from them. But I kind of liked it, and I didn't have to do problem sets. I was doing papers. It kind of felt right, and I ran with it. So I majored in sociology.
So what made you decide to go get your MBA?
Oh, well, moved to LA. Mm-hmm. And that's where we met.
Yeah, because you were doing promotion at the time. Yeah, we'll get into that. But yeah.
So I think was working at Interscope. And from there, went to UMCA, which was a marketing agency, Black-owned marketing agency. And that was the first time I saw two entrepreneurs really doing their thing. And it kind of gave me the confidence to go out there and do what I, you know, feel confident to go out there and do something. And that was off the beaten path. And I saw examples of it. Stanford's a place that kind of promoted that kind of thought. So during that time, I also had a promotion company. So I had King of Things Entertainment. So mm-hmm. if you were in LA, at, you know, between 2005 to 2012, you dealt with the KOT. We had a hell of a run.
You did. I had somebody on the Commas Club. Commas is obviously our company. They were on the website and they were going through the back end, and we have like perks. So we did a partnership with Samsung Next. Nice. Thanks for that.
Nice.
And they ran into
Tone.
Yes. They ran into Tone and they were like, didn't he have a promotions company back in the day in LA? And I was like, actually, yes.
Yeah, we flipped it up on everybody. No one kind of saw that. But yeah, I came out here, and one of the things I loved to do in college was party. I don't drink, don't smoke, but I love to party. So I love, you know, the study of group interaction. I like to call it sociology, bringing people together.
My major's working for me.
Creating experiences for people. Love to do that. And I moved to LA. I knew 20 people, and I was like, I'm going to become one of the biggest event producers, biggest club promoters in the country. That was kind of my goal at 22, 23 years old. And started working that beat, going out 4 to 5 nights a week, going out literally not knowing people and saying, all right, we're going to meet 40 to 50 new people every single night. Did that for 2 years, started producing some of our events and caught some breaks, and we ended up creating this promotion juggernaut. Did that. That led to doing other businesses. So we had a moving and cleaning company for a while. We had a digital agency, real estate, went through the recession. Business went down a little bit, then we were able to like kind of balance it out and get to a point where we're doing well again. And it was around 2010, 2011, where Tone and I looked at each other and we're kind of like, well, what's the next step? We've achieved a lot of our goals. What do we want to do next? And some of that was unclear. And I think that, you know, you tend to make decisions from a position of strength, a position of insecurity at different times. At this time, I think I was making truly a great decision on paper and a great decision. I mean, funny enough, I'm going to my 5-year business school reunion tomorrow. But
wow.
The big reason why I was doing it was like, hey, I was like, you know what? I'm a Black entrepreneur who's bootstrapped everything that we've done. I've never raised money. I've never gone through that whole process. And at the time, I was thinking that I needed to have the paperwork that was like made sure that if my name went across the table against anybody else's name, that I had the credentials, that I had the paperwork. And that's kind of what led me to make sure, to make the decision to say, hey, I'm going to go to business school, and chose to go to Kellogg Northwestern School.
So you didn't, that's interesting, because you didn't need to go to business school to build the businesses. You wanted to go to business school for the credibility.
Yeah. I mean, there was a combination of credibility. There was a combination of the network.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back, I don't think I needed the credibility. To be honest with you. Like, I think that, again, you make decisions from a position of strength or insecurity. I think I made that decision, or that portion of the decision was more from an insecure position, as opposed to saying, hey, I am a bootstrap Black entrepreneur who went to Stanford. And as a result of that, I should have access to deals and to opportunities. So let me double down on that. That was a decision I made looking at what I didn't have. And I knew the credibility would help whenever it was time to do whatever was next. So I made it from that perspective. Now, the network was a different thing. It was definitely the opportunity to have business people. Like, I have friends across everything, doctors, lawyers, teachers, parole officers, you name that. But having a group of people in business who are at the top of what they were doing, and they were going to be not people who are just in my network, but friends, like real homies who I can text and say, what's good, I'm in town, or they come to town and they're staying at my crib. Like, I wanted to have that network, and choosing to go to business school was a big part of having that, because I knew it would pay off for deals and business opportunities and whatever was going to be in the future. So those were kind of the two things that led me to making that decision.
So going back to what you said earlier, so you don't think you got that from Stanford? Because I know, I mean, if you look at the VC community now, everybody graduated from Stanford, right? It's like their great-grandfather started there, and then it continued on and on and on. So you didn't feel like you had that network while you were there?
I didn't look for it for that. I didn't look for it from a business perspective. I just kind of was a student. I was young. Also, this is, you know, I went to graduate in 2004. So there weren't a lot of like young black entrepreneurs coming out of Stanford right. at that time. There were entrepreneurs. This is, you know, we all got Facebook in 2004 during Dead Week in March. Like every like this is the beginning of kind of this whole social media digital space or digital
right.
age. You know, you weren't having the we went through the initial tech boom and stuff, but that or you know, that tech boom and that bubble, but that wasn't what my day to day was. My friends weren't doing those things. And it was one of those things where I knew all the resources were there and that they were there at Stanford, but I didn't tap into those resources. I tapped into the people. I tapped into the experiences. I wasn't looking at it from as primarily like a business perspective. And when I went back for my 5 years Stanford reunion was when I realized like, oh shit, like I took advantage of resources. There's way more that I didn't take advantage of. Kind of having that perspective and being more mature and being older, business school seemed like an attractive option to give myself the optionality of resources moving forward, and that was kind of what led to that decision.
So why Northwestern?
It was the best marketing school in the world.
Oh, touche.
I have a marketing lens on the world. I have a marketing background, whether it was doing promotion, digital marketing, working at Interscope. My mind thinks from a marketing perspective. So if I was going to go to school, I wanted to go to a top five school. So again, that's where the name recognition and all that came from. And then it came down to looking at schools that were great fits and would be great opportunities from a marketing perspective. And it's the best marketing school in the world. So I was extremely blessed to be able to get in and have that be a part of my overall narrative and story that I would be telling kind of moving forward.
Dope. And so you started, well, I'm going to go back before I get into 7X because that is a dope community and I want to dive into that. But before that, you said you had three other companies. How did you understand and learn how to build companies?
Gut. We were legitimate serial entrepreneurs. Like our moving and cleaning company that we had started, I'm not, no lie. We were moving out. We were living in a studio city. We were moving out of the Archstone. So shout out to anybody who lived in LA and lived in the Archstone and knows that whole run. And we were moving to another spot in Studio City. We needed to get the carpet cleaned. We hired somebody that came and cleaned the carpet. It was $200 that we paid. It took 30 minutes. Tony and I get on the phone. We're like, hold on a second.
This is a business. This is a business.
We're like, I know how to market. I know how to promote something. We know how to take care of, you know, employees. We're looking at the margins on this thing. And then we're like, wait a minute, let's like look at the moving side of this whole thing. Man, like the margins were crazy on that as well. So we decided to do it. Like there wasn't a lot of thought. The digital stuff came about because the people who were doing graphic design for us, they started reaching out. They had clients that they were working for, big name clients. We had the business acumen. So we're like, we'll do the account management. You do the creative aspect of it. Real estate, we took money from all of our event promotion and the different sponsorships and the different things that we were doing. We saved up and we were able to time the market at the end of the bottom and be able to get into the real estate game. Like we always wanted to do it. We knew that was a way to be able to start to begin, you know, gain wealth. So we pieced our money up, pooled up, got another partner in and found opportunities. So there were some things that were just instincts, but a lot of time it was just thinking about what is the opportunity and going for it.
So that's alignment though, like timing and alignment, right? I think that's something to note definitely is, of course, there's problems in the market. You had a solution for the first business, but the second business, it sounds like the market had bottomed out and you were like, this is the time, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs have great ideas, but wrong timing.
That's facts. Yeah. I really do think. I mean, if you think about people who had video, they remember like there was the email video marketing thing and that was like really ahead of its time. Like there were people and then they had like a whole multi-level marketing scheme kind of around that. But like they had technology that the rest of us weren't actually up on or like weren't really ready to use. I mean, that happens a lot. And I do think that there's this combination of timing. I think even we'll get to 7X, but I think even with 7X, I think that there when I initially thought of this before I even knew what to call it, I thought that it was the right time to do it back then, but as you see markets mature and you see certain things that are taking place in society, the type of moment that people of culture are having, companies finally paying attention, you're fighting certain battles at time that in 2010, they weren't looking for. They weren't looking for that community of leaders who are multicultural and are having impact. They were just putting you to the side. Now you can't launch a brand without it.
Right.
If you don't have them on your team, you are in trouble.
Real talk. I literally, like, even building out commas, like, I went through this whole process of trying to figure out what it was and, like, testing and iterating and, like, that whole thing. And I realized I had built the same company that I got venture-backed for, like, four years ago, mm-hmm. right? And I'm, like, literally yesterday, I'm sitting on my couch and I'm, like, this is 7 a.m. Like, I just literally built the same company. It's a slight twist on the company mm-hmm. in terms of, like, the content, but it's literally the same company. But mm-hmm. going back to timing, it was a course platform. We had coaches on the platform. Mm-hmm. Like, that thing is hot right now, right?
It's hot right now.
Before, it wasn't hot, right? So all about timing, 100%. So let's get into 7X. Tell us about that community and what you've built from that.
So 7X is a community of multicultural leaders, really targeting millennial and Gen Z folk and providing media experiences for them, providing media content as well as experiences for that group. I think that's fundamentally what it is. I think that my experience promoting was great because I got to take people from all different aspects of the world. So private equity person and D-boy and put them in a room from 10 to 2 a.m. And for somehow everybody coexisted in that. So I saw power and yeah, it was a 10 to 2 a.m. community that I was building, but it was a community. There were norms that were coming out of that. I think as I got older, as friends got older, as people started to mature, as markets started to change, the type of experiences, the type of content that people wanted, I kind of saw this opportunity to find these different people all across the world and start to bring them back together. I had something very special when I was in LA and was able to build that community. Now I've been able to have the experience of going to business school, living in Barcelona, traveling the world, meeting the people across all these different industries. When I look out there, I don't see a lot of things that are community-based for leaders, for the people who are now in the rooms and that are making decisions or influencing decisions. I see companies selling to them. I don't see a lot of times people, a brand or something that is built for that specific demographic and providing them those different services. So for me, it was about going out and saying, hey, like, I am blessed to know a lot of people who are doing extremely well across so many different industries. What do I do with that? Well, I know how to storytell. I know how to create experiences. I know how to bring people together. If I can get you out on Tuesday night, I can probably get you to South Africa. And we've done trips to South Africa. I can get you to Park City and we do a ski trip to Park City. We can create a summit and bring us all together. And it's not just for us to come together, because it is important that we do come together, especially the more digital the world gets, that we actually do have premium physical experiences to actually see each other, not just like you on Instagram, but actually hug you and say, what's good?
Right.
But I think it's more important to bring that community together, because I think the community that's going to have the biggest impact on the world is going to be that community, especially for the next generation. And to me, the media component of this, like, yeah, we come together as a community. That's part one. But what do we do with that power? We're in all these different rooms. If we are now aligned, if we are going after potential causes, if we are just storytelling and telling these different stories, the next generation is able to know what's possible. And that's the power of media. And that's where the social age and the digital age that we live in, that if you are able to storytell in a premium way, or even non-premium way, but if you're able to storytell and you are able to gain traction and get those messages out, you can help control a narrative. And so I was like, let me start with building the community. Let me bring them together for experiences. Let me start rolling out content around that community, showcasing the multiple aspects of their life. And as a result of that, packaging that out to show the next generation what's possible, then I think that we're really onto something. And for me, it's like life work. Like, it's not, you know, to me, like, when I look at this, like, I had to look at, like, what am I on this earth for? Like, what was I given the ability to do and utilize those gifts? And I think as you get older, you start to really think about, you shift from, like, what am I good at versus what is good for the we. And all of the work for 7X is fundamentally built on building for the we. So
that's what's up. I think what's interesting about what you said is, yeah, those communities now exist, like, in terms of, like, masterminds with, like, other communities without being, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But we don't see it with our community, right? So I think it's so important that you have that aspect and that perspective. And like you said, we're in control of our narrative and we're able to tell our own stories. And I just want to highlight more so about what you're saying in terms of the leadership, because it starts up top. Right? People are looking to figure out, okay, how do I connect to this person? How do I connect with this person? And I feel like there are certain communities that are connecting, but then there's that disconnect within other communities, mm-hmm. right? So what specifically have you guys done to kind of enhance that connection within the 7X Collective?
Yeah, so It all started initially when we did the ski trip. So I love to snowboard, and it all started from being at Stanford. And MLK weekend, all the black people at Stanford would all go on a ski trip, but all the black people would get together and be like, we're going to go on a ski trip. And the Ujamaa is the black dorm. They would lead a trip to Tahoe and went 4 years in a row, had an absolute blast. So after that, a bunch of our friends would get together and we would do that trip kind of every year. But it might be 8-10 people, nothing too big. And when I was living out in Portland, so after business school, I went to Nike and was out in Portland. And Portland, for me, I'm a big city kid. I told you, New York and L.A. Portland's a little sleepy for the kid. And I was in desperate need of some community. And I was like, you know what? Like, let me send a back call out to people across the country and say, hey, like, it was like 3 weeks before. It was like 3 weeks before MLK. I was like, hey, I want to do a ski trip to Park City, you know. Why don't you come out? I have something in my mind I kind of want to share with you guys. I'm going to look at it kind of a meeting of the minds. Don't know what it really feels like and looks like, but I know that I just want amazing people to be in the room. And your only ask is to invite another amazing person to come.
Dope.
And that led to 45 people pulling up to Park City. Rented out a bunch of fly cribs. And I was like, all right, cool. There's something. That's when I kind of introduced.
This works.
Right. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, people are willing to do this. All right, so let's start to build on that momentum. And that's where the ski trip became one of our like signature tentpole events. And each year we've been building. So getting community together, doing programming with day one, we're doing a town hall or having people doing talks and sharing experiences, fly in orator who's my boy, you know what I'm saying, who's done events for us, and you know, throw a crazy 90s party, doing yoga events, so like doing different programming to bring the community together. That was kind of the beginning of it. And from there, I was like, all right, cool. I know there's something there. The next thing we did was Coachella. We know that Coachella is a moment. People always hit up, hey, like, who's going to be there? What events are taking place? Are you guys going to go? And we're like, you know what? Cool. So we created a hospitality space and brought community together at Coachella 2 years ago. And it was like, all right, cool. We know we can play in the big moments. We know we can create other moments. Now it's about connecting people all across the country and building this community. People are believing in the ethos of what we're doing. They're believing in the we and the power of us coming together and building for each other versus just doing it individually. And that's when we rolled out the rotation. So the rotation is our nationwide event series. We started it in March. We did an event in LA, Houston, and New York. We partnered with Twitter and in LA That was a personal development workshop. Health and Wellness is the next one that we're going to be doing with them. I was just talking to them today. Did a dinner in New York, did a pull-up event in Houston, and we have other events that we're going to be doing that we have people in the community organizing in Chicago, in D.C., in Atlanta, in the Bay Area, as well as New York and Houston, to bring people together because people are looking for that kind of that community and looking for like-minded people. So
that's dope. What results are you seeing come out of that since you have so many powerful people in the same room?
A lot. I mean, I think there's multiple things. I think there's one, people realizing, again, they're not alone. That's one result. I think then we get to see the multiple people connecting with each other. And then I look up on Instagram and I'm like, y'all, how come I wasn't invited? Like, y'all over here having lunch.
When y'all become friends.
Yeah, and I'm like, y'all ain't even gonna holler at me? Like, what's good? So, but that is how we know, like, it's starting to get
it's out. Working, yeah.
And then we've been able, you know, we've had the opportunity to work with brands. So, you know, from the events that we've done, people are seeing what we're doing. So we have the opportunity to work with Jordan Brand, the opportunity to work with Twitter. We have a whole entire list of other brands that are now seeing how powerful our community is and wanting to gain insights and gain access to that community. So, because from that, we're having kind of like this biz dev cycle who either want to partner with content or partner with different experiences or even have consultation, you know, due to the marketing background of how to best communicate to this up and coming multicultural market.
That's so interesting because I feel like when people are building businesses, community has become the catalyst, right? Like build community first. How important do you think it is to niche down and be very specific about the community that you're building?
I think you have to. I think part of the reason, like, it's funny enough, you talk about timing and markets. Like a lot of the ideas that we had for 7X came around 2015, 2016. While living in Portland, when I would fly out on planes week to week, going to different places to stay sane, and I was like writing out this plan. What we are now, I mean, we are really seeing the insights that we gain from people and taking our time let us really know what type of experiences to create, the level of the content, like how premium people want stuff, who to say no to. Like that helped us gain a lot of those insights. And I think that a lot of times brands talk about building community, but are you actually accessing the community? Or is there a person at the brand who is speaking to members of the community? And not just digitally, but actually physically. Are you creating real opportunities for communities to come together? Like I say, our core asset is our community. Mm-hmm. We have multiple ways to serve them. That's content. We can do it through experiences. We could do it through consultation. We could sell merch. We could create a fund. There's a range of things that we could do, but the core asset of what we are doing truly is community. And you know, I think that that is kind of what sets us up. And I think that brands that understand that and actually are engaging their community and like niching it are putting themselves in the best position, especially when you're starting.
I love that you say that because I've struggled with that myself, even trying to figure out, like, I understand what community I want to serve for commas, right? But then I feel like because there's such a stigma, it's so interesting because there's such a stigma around like niching down a community by race, mm-hmm. right? Because of what we've been like kind of like conditioned to believe about that, right? Yeah. But then you kind of like, if that's an attribute of your community, then you kind of have to just do it, right? Mm-hmm. So like recently I'm just like, okay, we are a platform for minority and female entrepreneurs, period. Right? But it took me so long to even get to that point because I'm like, I don't want to say that, da, 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 you know, because you feel a certain way because of what has been socialized. Yeah. So how do you deal with things like that? Like, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are trying to niche their community down?
I think if you don't stand for some, if you don't stand for something, you stand for everything. It means you stand for nothing. And so I think in order to get the right insights, you have to pick a consumer. Like, we were very clear about what version, like, where our consumer lived, who they are, their psychographics. Like, our stuff wasn't just about race, but we were like, all right, if you follow into this multicultural thing, which so happens to, you know, have a, you know, a tint of your skin that may be
a skews that way.
Skews that way. And you live in these markets and you graduated and you, like, you've done certain things and you're a professional. Like, we are, like, these are the insights to start. That doesn't mean we're not going to get more people to come into the web, but we felt like they were the, you know, influencer to get started around, but like they were the ones who were having the most influence. And through that, they can influence other people and bring people in from different demographics and different walks of life. But we felt it was super important to really focus on that consumer. And I think that if you're not willing to do that and you're not willing to take that stake in the beginning, then you're just going to be throwing things out there and trying to please everybody. And then the group that you really need to follow is not going to be the one that's going to come and follow you. So I feel confident in our community because I assessed our community and said, wow, we're in all of these companies. We're building all of these companies. We're in all of these different places. Let me tap into that group that we also have a lot of the same cultural understanding and same beliefs, or not even beliefs, but same cultural, you know, understanding, and a lot of people having the same experience. Let's tap into that group. And then from there, it's going to open doors everywhere else. So, you know, otherwise you're boiling the ocean. Yep. And it's too hard to process and you don't know what you're standing for. And I think you don't end up, you know, serving anybody.
I love that. I love that so much. So speaking of community, how do they get access to 7X?
So follow at, so Instagram, Facebook, Twitter are, you can follow at Welcome, WELCOME, TO, the number 7X. So Welcome to 7X. That's also the home of our media platform. So welcome to 7x.com. I'm saying that's the name of our media platform as well. And then it's about getting connected with community. So as we are doing events and we announce certain events, pull up to the events. And we've really, like, there's a lot of ways that we can do this. I think that my promotion was interesting back in the day because you had the ability to kind of say, all right, I'm going to have a core group of people, but then we can like spray it out to everybody and anybody who kind of hears about it can come. And then you kind of do your sifting at the door. Type thing. And I think that we are being very, very selective about building it one person at a time. So I believe truly, like, if we go and try to hack growth all across it, we are diluting the product. You know, we are diluting the experience. We are diluting the content. So as people are engaging, communities engaging digitally, they'll let us know. And please let us know what type of content you would like to see. When we're having experiences and we invite you, Sequoia, you come to an event, you're going to bring a homie. That homie is going to then come to something else. He or she, or they are, you know, they will come, all the homies, they'll invite somebody else. And that's how we plan on building it. So, you know, that's how, you know, easiest way to get connected.
That's what's up. And then how do they find you?
Me, so it's at Rasheen, if you want to find me, at R-A-H-S-H-I-E-N-E. That's my IG. And you could also hit email as well. So info@welcometo7x.com. And I promise you, we will respond.
As Rasheen touched up upon during his interview, building a community is important for your business. And here is why. You give your community a place to gather, right? So essentially, when people have a sense of belonging, they gather together, they collaborate, and then they start to build that energy and momentum around your brand. So that is one element that is super important. Also, you get to own your community. And what I mean by this is, as we're reliant on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all these other social media platforms, we don't technically own the customer, meaning if any of them shut down tomorrow, our customer base would go with them. So by having a community through an email list or through another platform that you essentially have facilitated or you own, then you actually get to own your customer. It also gives them the opportunity to know, like, and trust you. And we know that whenever a customer buys, it's because they actually know the brand, they like the brand, and they absolutely trust the brand. It gives them the opportunity to be evangelists for your brand. So we all know that word of mouth is the highest conversion rate, and it gives them a sense of brand loyalty because they know that they're a part of this community, right? And then you can launch whatever products or services you have to that community because they're already loyal to you. You also get the opportunity to get feedback and information and ideas from that community because they know what they want to see. So you get to directly service them without having to go through a third party. You get the information direct from the horse's mouth. And you get user-generated content. So if they're posting about you, if they're posting about all the cool things they're doing inside of your community, then you get the opportunity to share that and grow your brand equity. So how do you build a community? Well, first things first, you got to create a space for them. So essentially for Commas Club, our community lives actually on our platform. So we create a space. We ask them to share their wins. We ask them if they need any help, what they need specific help with. We just give them the opportunity to input whatever they need and we respond. And that could come from myself, the founder. That could come from the community members themselves. But it's a collaborative effort. You want to incentivize early contributors. So if there are people who are early founders, say you just launched a platform and they're the first ones on board, maybe give them a discount, maybe give them something like a package, or maybe they get a t-shirt and a pen or something that makes them feel special and really a part of the community. So think about ways to celebrate your community in that sense. You want to nurture the community. So consistently giving them value and always providing them with what they need. So if it's information, if you're in the information space, if it's a product, maybe giving them samples, whatever it is, give them value consistently. Yeah, so when I started Commas Club, essentially, I wasn't sure what type of community I wanted to be or how I even wanted to function. But as I started to develop it over time, I realized that we needed to rely on each other versus just them talking to me directly. So a lot of the times we would have one-on-one coaching calls where I would be like, okay, let me analyze your business. This is what's going on. This is what you need to do versus having the input of a community, which is so different because you just get a bigger perspective. I think that's been super effective because it gives a perspective that you wouldn't necessarily get from just one person. And when you're building a company, you want different perspectives. You don't want to rely on one person's thought process because essentially when a business is out in the world anyway, it's not just one person that's buying. It's a collective of people. So getting that input up front is extremely important. So I think it's super important that you niche down, as Rasheen spoke about earlier. Having too broad of an audience it's not effective. You want to make sure that you're super specific. So in Kama's case, we serve tech-enabled entrepreneurs who are in the e-commerce marketplace, mobile app space, multicultural, and women. And those people are trying to basically scale and grow their businesses, right? So that's a very specific niche. You could serve women who are mompreneurs. You could serve, you know, guys who are into sports. Whatever it is, make sure you're super specific about your niche. And even sports is still very broad. It could be guys who collect trading cards. I don't know. Just make sure you're super specific about the niche that you're serving because it's so much easier to get from point A to point B and service that market versus being super broad and basically boiling the ocean and not serving anybody. So you want to join a community that you connect with and that you relate to and you find inspiration in. I think that's super important. I think that you should make sure that you're going out to events and you're connecting in person if you can. If not, definitely if you're digital, make sure that you're connecting online via video chat. Try to connect maybe once, twice a week if it's possible for that community, if they've bred that kind of interaction, because I think it's so important to interact with the community. When you're too separate, then you're working in silos still, right? So make sure you always come back, connect with that community as much as possible, initiate. So don't wait for the person who has organized the community or is leading the community to initiate. You can take that initiative and it just makes it for a more communal place and a lot of amazing growth. And that's what Commas does. We initially give you that opportunity to connect with like-minded individuals, founders who are in the tech space, in addition to giving you support to grow and scale your business. Yo, I have to take a quick digression to tell you guys about some absolute BS that happened to me. Tech gone extremely wrong. So what happened was I ended up getting a charge on my account from Wells Fargo. And I looked at my account and I was like, what is this? It was from the store called like Tech Shop or something like that, right? And I'm like, it was like a $100 charge. And I'm like, I've never, ever ordered from the store. I know what I order, right? I'm very stickler when it comes to my finances. I have budgets for everything. And so what happened was I call Wells Fargo and I tell them, hey, I did not place this order. Can you guys check into it? And they were like, absolutely. They ended up, you know, doing a fraud report for it and found out that it was a fraudulent charge. And then ultimately disconnecting that credit card and giving me a whole new card, right? And so fast forward to about a week later. Now, here's the kicker. And this is, you know, cybersecurity. We need to figure this one out because I am sitting in my house and I get a ping because every time our mail comes, they send me a text message, you know, when a package is there and I have to go pick it up from this like digital box, right? And so I get this ping and I'm like, okay, I go downstairs, pick up this package. Mind you, I'm like, I didn't order anything though, because I know what I order. Also, I'm not the person that just shops online and this stuff just shows up all the time. And so I go downstairs, I get this package, I come upstairs and I'm like, what is this package? And I'm a little nervous because I know I didn't order anything. And so I'm thinking that whatever that fraudulent charge was, what it was, I didn't think it would go anywhere further than that. And so basically I get this package, I open the package and it is from the company that charged my card, right? And it's a sweater and a t-shirt. And I'm like, what in the, because how? They had my information to charge my account and then shipped out products? That was crazy to me. Like that is next level fraud, right? To deliver the product still and then charge the account. I do not know what the rationale behind that is whatsoever, but I will say this. I'm just in shock. I'm totally in shock by the fact that they were able to do this and like get away with it because I Googled it and it turns out that this company has done this multiple times to a lot of different people and the company still hasn't been shut down. So is this their way of charging and selling their goods without actually a person purchasing them? That's what it kind of feels like to me, which is absolutely insane. I mean, maybe most people don't look at their cards, but I'm sure people look at their mail. So anyway, my point is, if you are not checking your cards regularly, maybe that's something that you should look into doing because absolutely fraudulent charges get put on our cards all the time. Most banks are pretty good about spotting them, but for whatever reason, this company was able to get past my bank and send me products. So yeah, definitely look into that.
This is The Plug.
You know who's The Plug.
It's time to get caught up on the hottest in tech.
Keep it locked, you heard.
With Sequoia Blodgett.
I see you, little mama.
There are constantly trends that are changing within industries, and we have to keep abreast of the information because as business owners, as entrepreneurs, as founders, we need to know what's going on all the time, right? And originally when we built up Commas, we had the idea of making sure that we were giving you information around marketing, sales, publicity, basically how to get your business off the ground. But as we grew and we iterated, we found that that just wasn't enough. So what we did in order to enhance the services is we have brought you guys the Commas Club. What the Commas Club is an entrepreneurship community and support system for founders. So think about it like this. When you start a business, you don't have a lot of capital and you go into it. Sometimes you have a co-founder, if you're lucky. Many times you're a solo founder and you go through this process trying to build this business and you end up being customer service. You end up being marketing. You end up being all of these titles which don't allow you to focus on the main title in order to grow the business, which is the CEO. So what we've done is we've given you guys that opportunity through our platform where you can enroll onto the site and essentially we're your team until you can afford to hire one. If that sounds like you, reach out to us at commasclub.com. In order to keep the community exclusive and effective, enrollment opens a few times a year. So go ahead and join our wait list.